Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Scarlet Moffat's answering the door.
Bonnie! Actually, who is it? Is it still there?
Who is it?
Hiya! How much is the for windows? 20. Thank you. I'll just go and get it. I owe the window cleaner £20. Bonnie, calm down, man. Right, sorry.
This week on Walking the Dog, I chatted to TV and show business queen Scarlet Moffat. Full disclosure, this episode should probably be renamed Two Women Lays Around With Their Dogs Whilst Gossiping on the Phone. But before you judge us, that's because Scarlett was in County Durham, I was in London, and we both got reined in. But it turned out we didn't need a walk to bond, because Scarlett is even more obsessed by dogs than me, especially her very own Chihuahua, Bonnie. Scarlett was thrust into the spotlight at a fairly young age after appearing on Gogglebox and then I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here. But I got the sense she's actually quite a naturally introverted, reflective person. She told me about being happy with her own company and escaping into books as a child. We also talked about her hilarious family, how her life changed so suddenly, and why she's happiest hanging out with her policeman boyfriend, Scott, who she hosts a podcast with called Scarlet Moffat Wants to Believe, as well as her upcoming stint on ITV's Celebrity Karaoke Club, where she'll be unleashing the Moffat vocals. We had such a lovely chat, mainly because Scarlett will chat away honestly about anything. So I really hope you enjoy it as much as I did. If you do, please remember to rate, review and subscribe. I'll hand you over to the woman herself now. Here's Scarlett and Bonnie.
Oh, Bonnie, come on. I'm actually late in bed.
Scarlett Moffat, today's guest, is sleeping in bed with the dog.
Yeah, we're just chilling with the dog.
What's Bonnie doing? Is she jumping up next to you?
Yeah, so she's eating a treat because Bonnie, it's raining here and Bonnie just refuses to go out when it's raining. She's like a princess.
My dog Ray is exactly the same.
Because you have a Shih Tzu, don't you?
I have a Shih Tzu and he just, if it's raining at all, I say if it's raining, if it's not sort of the equivalent of a lovely day in Ibiza, yeah, he will just stand by the door giving me an evil and won't move.
That is the same as Bonnie. I actually have a Shih Tzu as well.
Oh, well, Scarlett, I want to know all about your dogs. I need to properly introduce you. I'm really excited because I've been wanting to get this woman on for so long and finally I have. I'm with the very wonderful Scarlett Moffat.
Oh, thank you. That was a nice introduction.
Well, welcome to the podcast. And we should say we're doing this remotely because we're both responsible citizens and we don't want to be dashing here, there, all over the country when we should be keeping travel to a minimum. So you're in, you've just said, but tell us again, you are based in at the moment.
County Durham.
And talk me through Bonnie, who you're with today.
So she is a little smooth coat chihuahua. And she's like a princess. But she's 5 now. I actually forgot how old she was. In my head, she's still a puppy. And I keep telling everyone she's a puppy, but she's not really. She's old.
And is she your only dog, Scarlett? Have you just... You said you had a Shih Tzu. Is that right?
Yeah, so I've got a Shih Tzu, but he actually lives with my mum and dad. He got his bits chopped off recently. Right. And he's just completely changed personalities. Like, he used to be super crazy and now he's super chilled and, like, this house is too crazy for him, so he lives with my mum and dad.
I'm sure there's a lesson to be learnt from that, gentlemen.
Yeah. just don't chop them off.
And what's the Shih Tzu called, Scarlett?
He's called Harry.
You had dogs growing up, didn't you?
Yeah, so I've always had a dog in the house, actually. So please don't laugh, because everyone always laughs when I don't know why I called him this. But when I was 5, I got my first dog, and he was a Labrador called Glenn. which now I look back, like, I have no idea where that name came from. And as a 5-year-old shouting in the park, Glenn, it is a bit weird.
Why do you think you were named him Glenn?
I just really like human names. Like Bonnie, isn't it? Because I'm named after Scarlett O'Hara from Gone with the Wind. Her full name is Bonnie Blue Butler. She's named after the first child that Scarlett O'Hara has.
A friend of mine once said to me that I reminded them of Bonnie Blue Bell. And seeing as her only character trait is being spoilt before she dies, I wasn't sure how to take that.
I would take it as a compliment.
So you were saying Glenn was your first dog?
Yeah.
And your parents were, did they love dogs? Did your parents, you know, your family love dogs?
My mum didn't, I'll be honest. My mum, like, hates all animals, really, which doesn't really paint her in the best light. But she's a very caring person, but she hates, like, just butterflies, anything. She just hates all animals. But she likes her own dogs. But other people she's not keen on.
I want to know a bit about your childhood, because you've just told me that you were named after Scarlett O'Hara, which is so brilliant. And kind of there was a weird, unusual story behind it, wasn't there?
Yeah, so my mum and dad, because my mum and dad had me when they were quite young, so my mum was 19, and they couldn't really decide what to call me. And it's quite a big thing, isn't it, like naming someone. Like, that's the name you're stuck with for the rest of your life. So my dad wanted to call me Sigourney because he loves the film Alien and his favourite character in that is Sigourney Weaver. So they had a game of Scrabble to determine who would pick my first name. And thankfully, my mum knew the word quixotism. And that is why I'm called Scarlett Sigourney and not Sigourney Scarlett.
Were you pleased that you got Scarlett instead of Sigourney then?
Well, I mean, then I learned who Scarlett O'Hara was, and she was like, she wasn't the best of people, was she really? She was a bit of an arsehole. But I think it does explain why I got an A star in textiles GCSE, because she was very good at sewing. And I think that, like, that side of me was because of my namesake.
So your family, at that point, it was just you and your mum, Betty, am I right?
Yeah, Betty.
Elizabeth.
Yes, Elizabeth.
I feel I can call her Betty.
Yeah, you can.
And your dad, all I know is that he has Alan Shearer hair, but is he called Mark, your dad?
Yeah, but everyone calls him Toffo. I don't know
that?
What. I actually have no idea, but even I call him Toffo. Which I know, like, people might think, because I actually sometimes call my mum Betty and my dad Toffo, which I think it's just a northern thing, because I once did that in London and someone was like, that's really disrespectful, calling your parents by the first name. I'm like, oh, everyone does it up north.
I rather like it when people do that, because I think it's sort of relating to them as people, isn't it? You do things for me. It's kind of, oh no, we're all individuals. You know, I think it's quite nice when kids do that.
And everyone has the same accent up here. We all sound exactly the same. So if everyone's shouting mum and dad, you don't know who they're talking to.
So I'm interested to know, because you were an only child at that point, and obviously your parents, as you say, were pretty young when they had you. Can you remind me how old they were again?
Yeah, so my mum was 19, my dad was 23, and my nanny was 37. So
gosh.
My nan, yeah. And it's so funny because I always remember my nan being like an old person. Like, she always had chalk ices in the drawer. She taught me how to knit. She was always drinking snowballs. But then I look back and I'm like, in 8 years' time, I will be her age when I was born.
What sort of effect do you think that had on you, in the sense that I got the sense when I read your book of you almost being sort of curiously sophisticated and an adult almost for your age when you were a child?
Yeah, and I think that's because my mum and dad were like my best friends. I was always a bit weird. Like, my dad would take me like metal detecting. That was one of our favourite things to do. And we'd go looking for crop circles with Glenn. That was like my childhood. So I think, yeah, I always have been a little bit older than my age. I mean, I know what type of person I was at 19, and the thought of looking after another human, now it all makes sense of, like, obviously, like, when you're older, you know how to look after people more. And I think, like, a big thing that all brought us together, it wasn't like a strict family. My dad would, a trick that he used to do is he would pretend that he was stuck down the plug hole in the bathroom. And he would, obviously, now I know he would hide behind the door. And my mum would shout at me and she'd be like, Scarlett, quick, come through. And then he'd be doing a little voice and he'd be like, I'm stuck, help, help. And so my mum would be like, you need to go and get some string, you need to go. So I'd like run to the kitchen, get some string. And then he'd quickly jump in the bath and he'd be like, oh, I'm saved. And I'd be like, oh, Dad, I'm so pleased because I just don't know what I'd do if you got stuck down there forever. And he must have done that. And then apparently this isn't a thing that lots of people do, but my mum used to pretend to be dead all the time, which actually sounds horrific, but it was the funnest game as a kid. So I remember being about six and she would like put tomato sauce on her mouth as if she was like bleeding from the mouth, and then my dad would be like, what are we gonna do? And I'd like pretend to resuscitate her and stuff. And like that, at the time it was hilarious, and I'd be like, and then she'd like pretend to breathe and I'd be like, yay, all is well. But then when I tell my friends that, they're like, are you okay? Like, that sounds horrific. The thing is, if the people that you love the most, we can all take the mick out of each other. Anything that anyone else says can't affect you. So for example, I had really bushy eyebrows. Like, I had a full-on monobrow until the age of 12. And my mum and dad would call me Helga Pataki. You know, like the girl off Hey Arnold with the big eyebrow. That was my nickname until I was 12 from my own parents. They'd go, come on, Helga. So then when other kids called me at school, I'd be like, well, I'm not really bothered because my own mum and dad called me Helga Pataki and I laugh about it. So I think really they just sort of taught me how to just have a laugh. Like, if you take back control of joking about yourself and being like and owning it, no one else can really hurt you.
Yeah. And so it gives you a sort of emotional resilience, I suppose, in a way.
Yeah. All of us are like that. We're a really big family and we're all like that. Like, a term of endearment for us is like we'd call each other lizard lips. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, so we'd be like, you all right, lizard lips? And that's us being nice to each other. And so, yeah, I think because we all did that, and I did sort of feel invincible. I think obviously being bullied is awful, but my dad would say bullies are like sandpaper. The more they wear you down, the more polished you become. And I always took that, and like, so whenever anyone was like mean to me or name called, even though it hurt, I would come back home and then like they'd say, well, what did they say? And I'd say, well, they said that my eyebrows like are awful. And my mum's like, well, they are a bit, aren't they? Like, you don't like them either, do you? And I'd be like, oh yeah. And she's like, so why are you getting upset? And I'm like, oh yeah, I suppose I don't know, because they're not actually saying anything that I don't think myself. Do you know what I mean? And which sounds really harsh, but actually it just meant that I didn't really care. So like, if someone was like, it's like now, for example, if someone says, oh, you're fat, that I can't get offended by that because I am.
I wanted to ask, because your dad was a welder and your mum was, she worked in retail, didn't she?
Yeah.
And they sound like they had a real work ethic, which obviously rubbed off on you a bit, didn't it?
Yeah. And I remember sort of being very envious of my friends because their parents were home all the time. My mum would have to go to work. My dad always started work at 6 a.m. And then my nan would take me to school, then she'd go to work, then I'd come back, I'd sometimes go to my auntie's, she worked at an old people's home, so I would stay there until my mum and dad finished work, and then they'd pick me up, and I used to be so envious. I used to be like, oh, I wish like my mum was one of those mums where I'd come home and like chicken nuggets and chips would be on the table. But then I realised now it meant we could go abroad on a holiday every year, which was like a really massive thing at the time, and I got to do ballroom and Latin dancing, and I got to get the trainers that I wanted and things like that, which I know sound like they're not important, but actually when I look back, I'm like, that was really nice of them to do that. I do always say to my mum, oh, I'm so sorry, because I think a lot of the time I did make them feel bad, and they'd say things like, well, we go to work because otherwise we wouldn't be able to do nice things. And I'm like, I'm not bothered about nice things. I just want you to be here. But it makes sense now that I'm older.
Yeah. And I think, as you say, I realise that, you know, with my own family, you only realise that with age, don't you? And
yeah.
As you get closer to the age you were when your parents had you, you sort of think, gosh, how did they do it? You know, what they were juggling. And
I remember I'd look at my mum's, because she had like a diary and it would have her days off in. And I remember occasionally, if she was off on like a Wednesday, on the Tuesday night, I'd pretend I was ill. I'd be like, oh, I just really don't feel very well. And she's like, is it because I'm off work tomorrow? And I'm like, I had no idea. So then I'd like stay off school, like I'd pretend to be ill. I used to like put my hand near the light bulb so that it was hot, then touch my forehead. She'd be like, right, well, you can have a day off tomorrow then, but you've got to do your work. And then I'd quickly do my schoolwork on a morning and then just spend all day with her. And like, I didn't do it all the time because then she would click on. But I remember doing that just so I could literally have like a full day with my mum while she was off work.
Well, I used to pretend to be ill quite regularly. And in fact, I'm getting the impression I relate to a lot of your behaviour as a child because you strike me as something of a drama queen and
yeah.
As a fellow drama queen as a child, I can say that. So as an example of something I did, and now you're going to have to confess some things, I once wrote my mother a birthday card saying, dear mummy, please have a happy birthday because if you don't, ... in caps, it will ruin my whole life. Love, Emily. So that's where I am.
Yeah.
Over to you, Scarlett Moffat.
I mean, whenever I got in trouble, I'm quite manipulative, actually. Like, now that I look back, I'm like, what a manipulative child I was. I would pack a bag and it always had maybe like four pairs of pants in, my noddy toy, couple of Jacqueline Wilson books, you know, just the essentials. And then I'd write a letter and it would be like, dear Mum and Dad, I'm going back to the shop that you bought me from. Please go and buy a new child that will love you more than me, that will not be evil. P.S. I'm moving away. Like, love you lots. Then I'd knock on the living room door, post that letter, and then I'd take ages to fumble with the key so it gives them a chance to read the letter. And I'd be there with my little bag. And then they'd, like, open the door and they'd go, come on in, all's forgiven. And I'd be like, are you sure? You can go and buy another kid if you want. They'd be like, no, come on, it's fine. It's really evil, isn't it? That's so manipulative.
I feel less bad about the card now.
Yeah, but you should, honestly.
It's still pretty bad. What sort of a child were you at school? You know, were you quite, I get the sense you were into your books and you were not geeky, but you were quite insular in a way, weren't you?
I mean, at primary school I had like one best friend who was Rosie, and every Friday we'd go to her dad's house and he'd make us pancakes and we'd watch Bernard's Watch because my friends were at dancing. I didn't really have any friends at school, especially not secondary school. Like, I know this sounds sad, but people like Tracy Beaker were my friends. Like, to me, characters in books were my friends, and that's who I related to, really. And I would just constantly read all the time. And I mean, it helped because it meant that I was good at school. I really loved school. I was the kid that we were laughing, actually, because me and my mum found an old project that I'd done, and I'd done 50 pages including a contents page of farm diversification. And that was a project that no one even asked me to do. I just decided off my own back to do a 50 page project on farm diversification just for something to do. That sums my childhood up.
It's escapism in a way, isn't it?
Yeah, like Jacqueline, to me, Jacqueline Wilson was like my auntie. And sort of when my mum and dad were at work or I wasn't at dancing, they were my friends. That was my way of not feeling lonely, I suppose. I never felt lonely when I was reading because I was so into the book. You forget where you are, so you could be anywhere. To me, I was in the dumping ground with Tracy Beaker next to her while she was kicking off, rather than just sort of sat at home by myself eating a Kit Kat.
And did you, in your group of friends at school, What was your role? Do you know what I mean? I always think everyone, are you, you're the joker, aren't you? Although, I mean, it's oversimplifying stuff because you're just friends. But still, I think when you're growing up and you're sort of shaping your own identity, aren't you? There's a sense of what, who am I in this, yeah, in this gang?
Well, I think at dancing with my group of friends, I was definitely the joker. And I quickly found that an easy way to make friends is to make people laugh. And a lot of that actually is sort of taking the mick out of yourself. So in a way, you're sort of doing the bully's job because you just make jokes of yourself. And then that way everyone felt like, oh, well, she's okay. She can make a joke out of herself. We'll let her in our little gang. But yeah, I didn't really have like a proper group of friends until I was like 14. And I spent like a lot of time with my mum and dad. And actually, it was, and my mum always says, oh, I wish I'd never done this, but I sort of tried to fit in. So I remember being 14 and going through so many different phases. So my mum went out and bought me loads of Fred Perry jackets and some pink Timberlands. And she'd take me to these little mini, like, under 18 raves. And I quickly realised, like, I can't even pretend that I'm into this. This is not me at all. Then I went into a goth stage and my mum got me loads of eyeliner and loads of CDs. And I think that's the difference between when I was a teenager and my little sister, because my little sister's 14 now and we really encourage her not to fit in. Because you just quickly realise like that they're not real friends anyway. But as a kid, it means so much to fit in. Like you just want to... I wasn't even bothered about being popular. I just wanted to blend. That was my goal, really, to blend into school.
Sometimes I think it's going on to do something different or creative. It requires being a bit other, you know, yeah, which means you stand out at school because you're not like everyone else.
Yeah, I definitely think that. But it's just, and it's so hard to explain when you're a kid. So when I try and explain that to Ava, sometimes I can see her eye rolling me, but I'm like, just because she does things like Dungeons and Dragons. Her friends have got like an anime group. Like they're really different. Like I'm so happy that she's just unapologetically herself, because I wish that I'd sort of had the confidence to do that. Really,
I wanted to ask about when you got into ballroom dancing. How did that happen?
So my mum always loved watching like the very, very first Strictly Come Dancing. I'm not even sure it was called Strictly Come Dancing. It was on in the 80s. And so she loved that. So when I was 4, she actually took me to my first dance lesson and I just loved it. Like, and I can still now smell the inset hairspray. Like, still now it is engraved in the back of my throat. We used to put shoe polish on our hair so that it was really shiny. I remember you couldn't really get fake tan. So we used to get mini rollers, like what you roll paint with on walls, and bodybuilder tan. So, I mean, no wonder I got picked on, because, like, I remember once being 11 and going to school, like, full-on Oompa Loompa style. Like, I could blend into mahogany furniture. I was orange. It was ridiculous. And, like, it just did not come off. Like, we used to have Dettol baths to scrub the tan off.
And your mum, presumably, as well, you were saying, you know, she was working long hours, as was your dad. And that's quite a sort of a full-time job almost, isn't it? Going to the competitions. And presumably there's a big financial outlay as well, is there? With the clothes and the sequins. Yeah, and
it's only when I got older that I realised, like, I think practically my whole mum's wage sort of went on that dancing. And it's funny because I was one of the only kids that sort of went to... like a normal school, like a normal school. A lot of them went to private school and everything. And so really it was quite a weird environment to be in, because everyone was quite well-to-do. But I never, ever felt like I wasn't. I never felt like an outsider, or like my mum always made sure that I had private classes. And I did quite well, really. Like I was one of the top ones in the dance school, which I'm very proud of. I always feel like I'm being a big head, but I was really good.
Why did you stop doing it, Scarlett?
So I got to 19 and sort of got into... well, I was at uni. And then I was like, oh, these things called men and vodka shots. And I was sort of too busy going out that it just sort of took the back burner. And then I always had every intention of starting again, but like a year went by and then 2 years, and you realise that your fitness level's gone down and everyone who wasn't as good as you is now better than you because they've been going. So I just never started it again. It's one of my biggest regrets, really. I wish that I'd kept on doing it.
But then hang on, you must get the Strictly call every year. They must be dying for you to come on. Or are you too professional? Do you think that's
I mean, I haven't danced for like 10 years. And I think now if I was to dance, I probably would look like a sack of potatoes moving around the dance floor. So I don't know. I think maybe they think, oh, she's danced before. But I mean, let's be honest, a lot of people on that dance floor have danced before. Like coming out week one doing like the splits and stuff. I'm like, this isn't your first rodeo, is it, hon?
I know some of the guests are like, isn't it like Wayne's Sleep or something? Okay.
Come on, do a full tap routine, like just learnt it in a week. They've done amazing. Well done.
And they'll do the video, you know, when they do the video of him breaking down crying, saying, yeah, I just can't do it. I'm no good at dancing. And I was like, really?
By week three, they're strapped to the ceiling doing full flips.
Wayne, I thought you were the principal dancer of the Royal Ballet. That's weird. You're crying. Tell me, Scarlett, you had a really difficult moment, didn't you, when you were hit by a car when you were about 11?
Yeah, so I'd actually just learned how to ride a bike without stabilisers for about maybe a month, like of actually being confident. And this car came whizzing round the corner and bumped my wheel, and I just remember sort of like, it felt like about 10 seconds. It was probably half a second. I was like Peter Pan. I literally flew through the sky off this bike. And luckily I had a helmet on, but I smashed all my chin and my teeth, and I broke my front two teeth, and there was just blood everywhere. And I remember I had my favourite Tammy Girl t-shirt on. I was more gutted about my Tammy Girl t-shirt, to be honest. And it was just covered in blood. And I remember a girl called Kaylee, my friend, was trying to pick up shards of my teeth and just had them in her hand. And I ran in to see my mum, and like her face just went grey. And I had to have loads of surgery on my teeth and everything. And then the doctor said that possibly the trauma of that brought on Bell's palsy. And so a month later, I actually got Bell's palsy, which I know that the treatment's better for it now, but at the time, that's why my face isn't symmetrical and I have to sleep with like a sleep mask on because one of my eyes doesn't close properly. Then I lost the nerve in one of my tooth, so my front tooth went black. I had to have these plastic teeth because dentistry wasn't the greatest then. The veneers aren't like what they are now. And then I couldn't move half my face. So, I mean, it was like God looked down upon me and was like, we're going to have to give this girl a sense of humour, because if she didn't have bad luck, she'd have no luck at all.
That must have been really tough, actually, especially as you say, at that age, about to enter adolescence, yeah, and you're self-conscious enough anyway, you know. But I suppose your parents were just so relieved that it was nothing. I mean, it was serious for you and it had an impact on you, but not medically serious long term.
Yeah, because I remember it can be a sign of leukemia, and I remember not actually really understanding why I had to go to hospital and have all these blood tests and things. And it was one of the only, I've only ever seen my dad cry three times, and it was one of the only times I'd ever seen my dad cry. And I remember him making a joke of it because he used my socks. I had to take my shoes and socks off, and he used my sock to dry his eyes. And I remember him then blowing his nose in it to try and make a joke, saying, oh, you're going to have snotty feet now. But I remember feeling really weird by it. I was like, oh, what? Like, why are they so upset? But luckily it wasn't that. But I remember that was not a nice day. Mm. And I think because dancing was my safe place and it was a place where I could be my best self and I was a performer and I could sort of not be quiet geeky Scarlett. I could be like, oh, this person with like a glittery dress on living my best life. It affected that as well, because I was so shy to sort of smile because my smile wasn't the best. And but it did sort of help my confidence, but I think it was just harsh because that's when you sort of start fancying boys and boys start fancying you. And I always remember my cousin was just so pretty. She still is, actually, and she's lovely inside now. Mm. But all the boys used to fancy, and I always felt like the spare part. Like, I always remember being on MSN, and everyone used to say, oh, who do you fancy? I'd said, who do you fancy? And they told me, and they'd put you, question mark. And I thought this guy called Stewie meant he fancied me, but he was just asking me the same question. So he was like, you, question mark. And I remember feeling so, like, I remember standing up off my computer desk, literally, like, swinging around in my chair, like, yay, like, Stewie fancies me. And then I was like, really? And then he was like, yeah, like, let me know who you fancy. And I remember that was my first heartbreak, because I think even though we never actually were boyfriend and girlfriend, yeah, I remember feeling, wow, someone fancies me, and then realising, oh, no, they're just asking me who I fancy. And, of course, they were saying they fancied my cousin, and I was like, oh, I'm like the spare bloody part here.
It's when you look back on those hideous moments and, you know, what you must never tell your sister, and I never tell my nieces, is people say, oh, you'll forget it. You won't.
You won't. You won't. You never do.
You're telling me 15 years later or whatever. I mean, you've achieved quite a lot in your life, but we haven't even got to that yet. All we care about is the fact that Stewie said on you on MSN. Tell me what happened, Scholar, after school. You got the geek's revenge with the A grades, didn't you? You completely nailed your results, and that must have been a great day.
Yeah, do you know what, I remember going into the school gates and everything being set up outside, because it was a really hot day, and all of our results were out there, and my little sister had actually just been born as well. So she was born around the same time that I was getting my grades. So I was already feeling super happy. And yeah, and I got 13 A star to B GCSEs. And I remember seeing the kids that really picked on me, and some of them were upset. Some of them were like, oh, I'm not bothered. I remember one girl ripping her GCSE results up, and I was like, see? And I know, obviously, you know, sometimes grades don't matter depending on what job you wanted, but that to me was a very small victory, because it meant that I got to go to the college that I really wanted to go to. And I went to a lovely sixth form called Queen Elizabeth. And then there I made friends for life, and I did well there. And it meant that I got to go to university. And that's where literally my best friends came from.
At uni.
Yeah, because you get to really, when you're in a school, you're sort of thrown together. You have got to sort of, forced friends.
You were doing sports coaching. You switched degrees, didn't you? And did you not exactly look like the typical person doing sports coaching when you turned?
No, because what I did is I did a QTS because I wanted to be a primary school teacher. And they were like, right, so you're going to have to pick a core subject. And I was going to pick English, and then everyone was like, it's really difficult, don't choose English. So I was like, what is the easiest? And I was like, PE, that's really easy, isn't it? That's just kicking balls about, all that stuff. Oh my God, it was so difficult. And I remember going into the first lecture, and I wore a leopard print maxi dress. I had pillar blocks red hair, because my friend had helped me box dye my hair the night before. Full fake tan, false eyelashes. Everyone had tracksuits on. Literally, I was the only person. And the lecturer, Ian, he actually went, oh, have you got, this is sports coaching? I was yeah, I didn't get the memo of tracksuits. And he was like, of course we wear tracksuits.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
After university, you did a series of sort of proper jobs. Oh, there's Bonnie.
Yeah, she's gone crazy. We'll just ignore her because she always has a mad... No, she just always has a mad half hour. I think it's a chihuahua thing.
Does she... Oh, she might... Oh, there's the doorbell if you need to. I don't mind hanging on. I quite like the real life peeping in. We can hang on. Go and get the door, Scarlett. Let's see who it is. Scarlett Moffat's answering the door.
Bonnie! Actually, who is it? Is it still there?
Who is it?
Hiya! How much is the windows? 20. Thank you. I'll just go and get it. I owe the window cleaner £20. Bonnie, calm down, man. Right, sorry. Because I didn't have any money last time he came and he came randomly. But that's all right, isn't it? 20 quid for your windows washed.
Well, I don't know how many windows you've got, Scarlett. You could live in the Palace of Versailles. I mean,
it's quite a few windows, like.
But, that's decent prices, right? Yeah.
I think it's about 50 pence a window.
Do you find, Scarlett, because you still live in your manor, as it were, does everyone sort of know where you are? And obviously they know who you are, so... Is there a sense of kind of being respectful of you and looking after you and... Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think so. Bonnie! Come on in here. Come on.
There, Bonnie shows no such respect.
Yeah, no, she doesn't. There, just chill out there. Well, I do get the odd occasional person... It's happened about maybe 10 times. People have come to the door for jobs... So, like, they've come to the door and said, oh, would I be able to, like, do your makeup? Like, and I'm like, yes, but it's a bit weird you're coming to my house. Like, I don't know who you are.
Yeah.
But I understand and I completely get that, like, oh, my God, she's really going mad. I think she thinks he's still there.
She's...
Bonnie! Come on! Why are you doing that? You're normally good. Scott, just take her... He's actually still in bed because he didn't finish work till 7.
Oh, hi, Scott. That's Mr. Scarlett. Hi, Scott.
There, I've put her with him. Yeah, because he was on night, so he's still in bed. He's not lazy. It's 12 o'clock. He wouldn't normally be in bed at 12. Although I am. I've got no excuse.
What does Scott do? Are we allowed to know what Scott does?
Yeah, so he's a police officer.
I mean, that's the dream. I always used to say when I was younger, I was like, oh, I'd love to be with a man. And suddenly he'd get one of those lights out and just put it on the top of the car. You know when they do that? Oh, it's all I've ever wanted, Scarlett.
You can borrow Scott whenever you want.
Talk me through when you left university and you did a series of... You worked in shops, didn't you? You worked in Asda and places
like that.
Yes,
I've always had, like... So my first job was when I was 14... I've just always had jobs, whether it was, like, helping out at the dance school or while I was at uni, I worked at Asda, I worked as a shop girl, I handed out leaflets, I worked at Topshop, I worked at Clinique for a little bit.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I've had so many jobs. I sort of, like, got a job to suit... So, like, for example, I got a job at Topshop so me and my friends could get discount. And then I got a job at Clinique so that we could get free makeup. But yeah, when I left uni, it was really hard because it was like there was the recession on. And I remember sort of going to the job centre and had all these qualifications. And they said, oh, we're going to send you on a CV course. And I was like, what? And they said, yeah, we're going to send you on a course. It's for a full day and you learn how to write a CV. And I was just like, well, I know how to write a CV, like what jobs are available. And like every time I tried to get a job in teaching or coaching, they would say that I needed more experience. And I was like, well, if no one gives me a job, I'm never going to get experience. So it was like this really vicious circle. And so I ended up just sort of getting lots of odd jobs. And then I got a job working as a disability advisor, which was a really like fun, rewarding job. And I worked at a call centre as well to make a bit more money. And then my friend Tommy rang and said, oh, you know quite a lot of people. Do you know anyone who'll do this TV show? It's like a little audition. We'll come to the house. And I was like, oh, well, if you explain what show it is, I'll let people know. And he said, right, so you watch the telly? And I went, yeah. And he went, nah, that's it. I went, bloody hell, Tommy, they'll make programmes about anything these days, won't they? And he was like, no, it's really good. It's had one series out already. And I rang around and no one, literally everyone was like, no. So then Tommy was like, will you just do us a favour and like have your mum and dad round and like just do this little audition? And I was like, yeah, but we're not actually, it's not going on the TV, is it? He was like, no, it's not going on the TV. And then, yeah, me and my dad had like an argument about the one bedroom tax. I got Piers Morgan confused with David Cameron. And then the next day they rang and said, oh, we'd like you to do Gogglebox. And so that was like a little bit extra money. We got a free takeaway. We got 50 quid.
And how did your parents, when you explained it to them, Scarlett, do you think there was a sense of them sort of just thinking, oh, we'll just do this as a favour for Scarlett's mate? That's sort of why you went into it. So was that quite strange when suddenly you were going to be on TV every week?
Yeah, definitely. And it was actually my dad, the man who says nothing whilst filming Gogglebox, who was like, oh, well, what's the worst that can happen, really? And it was only on a Wednesday night when it wasn't like a big show when we came on it. So we had no idea of like the enormity of what it would become. So I think we just thought, oh, well, it'll be a bit of fun, won't it? 50 quid each and a takeaway. We get all bond as a family and watch a bit telly.
And were your parents still working at the time, so doing their day job, and were you still at ASDA, or had you...
So I was working as a disability advisor then, and my mum worked at Burton's, and my dad's still a welder now. He loves it. He thinks he's in Flashdance. So we all were like filmed like twice a week, and then we'd all just get up and do our normal jobs, which wasn't weird at first, but after a couple of years it was weird, because like I'd be going to get the bus to work, and people would be asking for photos and things, or they'd be like quoting something that I'd said on Gogglebox, and I'd be like, right, oh, this is actually getting a bit weird now, like people know who I am.
What, were you quite just overwhelmed initially? Because I think it's fame and any sort of attention like that, focus can be quite overwhelming initially. What aspects of it did you find, I suppose, tougher to deal with?
Oh, I think like the whole thing was overwhelming. And when you're a kid, you imagine being famous, so to speak, or publicly known as this really fun, cool thing, and people's asking for your autograph and like, wow, how cool is that? And then when it actually happens, you realise that a lot of your time is taken up. And all of a sudden, you can't just go to the shop with no makeup on and your hair on top of your head, or you can't go on a night out and be silly and get drunk and dance around with a mop in case someone's there with a camera or their phone, or you know. And so you do start at the beginning. I really like kept overthinking all the time. Like, it got to the point where I didn't really go out a lot because I didn't like to, because I don't like to be rude to people. So I'd end up chatting to people for like half an hour. Like, the amount of trains that I'd missed because I just didn't want to go, oh yeah, I've got to go now, because in my mind that was really rude. And like a couple of times when I had said to people, like especially like when Ava was only little, so I think when we started, Ava was maybe 8 years old, and if I was doing something with Ava, like I don't know, I remember taking her to paint some pottery, and people were videoing us while we were painting pottery, and I remember feeling like really like angry, because I was like, oh, you know, like she's only eight, so why are you doing this, like to us. Mm-hmm. And I remember getting really frustrated and for a long time, like, sort of just not really wanting to go out the house because I thought, oh, well, it's not the same anymore. I don't think that now. Like, I've learned how to sort of deal with it. And now I take it as a massive compliment that actually people know that I'm approachable. Because, I mean, there's a few people I've met off the telly and I've thought, oh, no, I'll not ask them for a photo. So it's nice that actually people think, oh, yeah, we can go off to Scarlett. She's one of us.
I get this sense of you being, in a way, quite an introverted child, you know, with your head in a book. Even if you were capable of being funny and mucking in with the family. And then you find yourself in essentially an extrovert's life, you know? And I wonder if there was a bit of a process of adjustment with that as well.
Do you know what? That's so nice and refreshing to hear that because so many times I try and explain that I'm actually quite shy and people are like, well, you can't be because of your job and the way that, but I actually am. Like, I have a very small circle of friends. I tend to do a lot of things in the house. I'm quite an indoorsy person. I don't really like going out for drinks. I sort of have house parties where I feel comfortable and stuff. And yeah, it is really hard to try. And I think sometimes, like, not rude, but I think sometimes when I'm sort of feeling a little bit shy or like when people come up and I'm on my own, I'm not with my mum or anything. Like, say if someone came and sat next to me on a train and chatted, it would take quite a while for me to sort of like warm up. And then I'd constantly feel myself apologising, being, oh, sorry, like, I'm actually quite shy. And so I do feel like I massively had to sort of learn how to cope with being in a room with a lot of people wanting to chat to you. Because I'd never had that before. No one really wanted to chat to us before. So it was fine being, like, an introvert when you're not on the TV because no one really wanted to know how my day was at Asda. But now all of a sudden that I'm on the TV, I was having to, yeah,
And when people make that assumption about you, of course, what they're forgetting is what you became best known for was doing exactly that, was sitting at home with your family talking quietly about the TV. You know, you weren't on the stage at the Palladium going, look at me, everyone.
Yeah, and do you know what, actually, Bonnie, I think that is why I've always loved having dogs, because my safe space is just with a dog. Like, I love just sitting and, like, I don't even have to be watching anything. I can literally just, when I go down London, because I normally go to London maybe 3 times a week, I always need a day after to do nothing. And I probably come across really rude because I don't even look at my phone and then I always have to play catch up. But it's because I always just, it's so loud to me. And that's why I moved back up north, because it's a lot quieter here and there is space to sort of just stick your wellies on and walk your dog. And I loved London, but it was just so busy all the time. So that's why I always say I'm a bit like Miley Cyrus. I feel like I've got the best of both worlds. Like, I sort of go down there and I'm like jazz hands Scarlett with like OQ and studio floor. And then I come back home and I'm like just sitting in a dressing gown for 3 days, eating carbs, loving life.
Obviously, everyone will know, you did I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here. And that was huge for you, wasn't it? In terms of just, I suppose, turning into this sort of national treasure, really.
Oh, thank you.
Was that, I mean, that was a big step for you, wasn't it?
That was crazy. So I got asked, like, I sort of went in to chat about doing it the year before. And it was one of the only times that I'd ever actually been to London, like, actually off the train, like, in London. So it was this, like, wow, like, I'm in London having a meeting about the jungle. And then, I don't know, like, my gut instinct was, like, just don't do it because no one's going to know who you are. Like, it's, can you really cope? I've never been away from my mum for that long before. But then I got asked to do it the year after and I thought, I can't miss this opportunity. Like, it's a show I absolutely love. My mum and dad will be going out there, so I'm only not seeing them for 2 weeks if I get voted out first. And then it did give me loads of confidence. Like, I think because you put in scenarios where you have to do crazy things, anything else just feels like it's tiny. Like I remember coming out of the jungle and doing karaoke for the first time, and I'd never dared do it before then, and I was like, if I can eat a camel penis, I can definitely sing a bit of like Gloria Gaynor on the karaoke.
That interests me. Is there a fearlessness to you, do you think, with regards to challenges? Do you think, oh, sod it, you know, you only live once, with stuff like that?
I think I always just think, like, because I've never really sort of, like, been the cool one or, like, been sort of accepted, I think I just really don't care what people think. I think that's the thing. I think I just think, well, what's the worst that can happen? Like, people are going to judge as well. He did that anyway, so I may as well just try it because life's too short. But I did definitely feel more confident, like, winning that show, because it's such a huge show, I did sort of feel like, oh, it's okay to be me. Like, I can be a bit weird and a bit introverted, because a lot of the time I just spent sitting on my hammock talking to Joel. Like, me and Joel would just sit for hours talking on the hammock, and I thought, how am I getting through? What are they showing? Because they must be showing me doing something interesting. So I definitely felt more accepted when I won that. So that was really nice.
Presumably, there's something about that show, I suppose, because as you say, it's kind of showing, it's showing the real you, because you're not in a studio, you haven't had your hair done, you haven't got anecdotes. Do you know what I mean? It's not the, there's not the option of having control over the editing or anything, you know.
And when you're like, you're hungry, you're tired, you're missing your family, like that is the realest you can get, because you can't fake that. Like if you know yourself, if you're hungry and tired, and then on top of that, it's cold, you just can't pretend. I used to be so self-conscious about the way that I looked and my body and everything, and so I would really try and, like, I would never edit, but I would try and, like, position myself in certain ways. And like, or I'd take it from certain angles. So now I've started, like, actually just doing videos, because there's no hiding then. And then I just think, if I do that, then people can see the real me, like, I'm owning myself again. So I've started doing that a lot, and it has helped my confidence, because I think sometimes, like, especially when I was younger and I constantly, like, filtered things, or, I mean, there were so many, if I went missing, they would have to have used a photo of me with a, like, dog filter on, which is like, like, honestly, my mum would always go, Scarlett, if you went missing, the posters would be you with, like, a dog tongue and dog ears, like, you need to stop using that filter. So I did, and, like, I do feel better for it, because at least now if I go missing, they've got actual photos of what I look like.
Can you imagine the police issuing your parents looking tearful at the press conference with a
just
picture
a photo
of you
with
the dog tongue?
Yeah. And then having to explain, she doesn't normally have these ears. This is just a filter.
Scarlett, here's a question. What do people get most wrong about you?
There's quite a lot, I suppose. I think people... Well, a big one is people assuming that I'm, like, really loud all the time and I'm, like, super confident. I'm definitely not super confident. And another one, like, and I don't know, maybe it's the way I've portrayed myself, but people always assume that I'm thick. Like, I get quite a lot of, like, stereotyping of people just assuming that I'm stupid. I don't know if it's, like, my accent or whatever, but... Like, I always remember filming and this producer sort of explaining the same thing to me three times. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's fine. I understand. And then explaining it again. And I was like, no, really, like, I understand. And I don't know if it's just because people just think I'm from the north, therefore I must be stupid. I don't know.
I was going to say that's interesting. That's very... That's very hurtful and unfair, isn't it? How do you react in situations like that? Are you a confronter or are you a people pleaser?
People pleaser. Massive people pleaser. Although sometimes I do just, like, because I find it really difficult to sort of be arsy with people. Like, in my head, I've got a whole sort of, like, I'm almost doing a soliloquy in my head. Like, I'm not saying it out loud, but inside I'm, like, screaming, like, I know I'm not stupid, you're the one that's doing it wrong. But then I'll just go, yeah, that's fine, okay, thanks for that. Well, inside I'm screaming, but on the outside I would never show that.
And I do think women have this a bit as well, is that I think as women you're slightly encouraged to not, to be good.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? To be the good girl.
Yeah, definitely. Because if not, that? you're a diva, or you get, like, if you actually have an opinion or you have an idea, sometimes it's sort of put across like, oh yeah, well done, you're thinking like a man.
Mm.
Or it's like, oh well, no, get back in your box, because that's sort of like not your place. As I've gotten older, I have just realised like it is quite difficult being a woman. I feel like I never know what, like, am I either too quiet or too loud, or I'm like not pretty enough, or I'm too fake, or I'm not fake enough. Like, I just feel like you can't win, so you've just got to be yourself and then not take anything personally and realise that it's other people's ignorance and them being uneducated, not you.
Tell me, Scott, I want to know, you've been with Scott for a while now, and you guys get on so well, you even do a podcast together. Tell me, how does that, what are you like to have a relationship with? What would Scott say about you? What makes it work?
Well, he always says I'm very kind. He always says I'm the kindest person that he knows, which is nice. I am a massive people pleaser and family girl, so
yeah,
like I am like a gran. Like, for example, I organise like family holidays, so yeah. I book family holidays for everyone. I have like Christmas at my house. I have birthday tea parties at my house, and I have done that like for 8 years now. So I am quite like a nan. That is my, I very much like being the mother role.
So how did you and Scott meet? Do people always joke the fact that you're going out with a policeman? I presume every time you tell people what he does, oh, I know how you two met, you know, yeah, etc.
Yeah, they do actually. But we've known each other for 12 years. So we've known each other like a very long time. And to be honest with you, I am going to be honest here, and he will appreciate me saying this because I don't ever admit it, but I had actually tried going on a date with him a few times, but we just always sort of like, I was either, when he was single, I was dating someone, when I was dating someone, he was single, so like, it just never sort of like matched up, but then now it did. So he actually, we like met in town and then started chatting, and then I actually had like a weird pap outside my house that was sort of trying to take photos inside my house, so I rang the local police station. I didn't 999 it. I was like, that isn't important enough for 999. And Scott actually came to the house to deal with that, and then I was like, oh, and my friend was in the house with me at the time, and I was like, he's so fit, like I really fancy him. And then Liam was like, well, why don't you just comment on a picture on Facebook? So I actually commented on a picture of him and his dog Toby, and I put, oh cute, and the dog.
You see, that's quite bold. I'm impressed.
I'd had a couple of drinks. I do not think, okay, I did that sober. Like on the morning I was like, I can't believe that I'd done that. But he commented back with a smiley face. Yeah, I was absolutely wounded. But then all of his friends were messaging him saying, why are you so bad at flirting, Scott?
Then
he got a couple of tips off his friends. And then we started chatting on Facebook Messenger, and I was like, he was just taking too long to ask me on a date. And I was like, look, do you want to go on a date or not? Because like, I don't have time for pleasantries. Like, I'm just so busy.
I've got an idea, Scarlett. You could have sent him a message saying, who do you fancy? And then he could have replied, you.
And then I'd be like, oh, I fancy you too. Oh, you meant, who do I fancy?
Because that always goes well for you.
Yeah, that actually is a good line for me. Oh, no, I'm starting to feel sick thinking about that.
I'm feeling sick. I will feel sick for the rest of my life about this. It keeps popping into my head. So you must have, with you and Scott, what do you think makes it work? What do you think? Because I don't know if you've had your heart broken before. I have. And
yeah, I have. It's awful.
When you look back on those relationships, Scarlett, when I do, I think there were red flags all along.
Yeah.
From the
honestly,
start?
Honestly, like, and I just wish I'd listened to my mum. I don't know why, because my mum always knows best, and I'd constantly find myself lying for people that I was in a relationship with, or I'd find excuses. So I'd be like, oh, well, no, maybe his ex is just messaging him because, you know, he's a nice person and that's why he's replying. Or maybe he got in at like 7 in the morning and messaged his friend saying, say that I was with you instead of a house party, because he's trying to spare my feelings and not make me overthink. But no, it turns out, should have just listened to my gut instinct and my mum, because that's always right. But
yeah,
with Scott, I always chose people. And again, I do think this is very deep, but I do think subconsciously I chose people that were sort of like aesthetically out of my league, because I'd always been that kid that could never get a boyfriend. So I think in my head, me choosing people who were like proper gym bods and were like the popular ones in the town, that was my way of like reclaiming my teenage years back of never being able to find anyone. But with Scott, like, he's obviously, I fancy him, but he's just like a really lovely person. Like, he's really kind. I never worry. And it's took me a while to get used to sort of not having drama. Like, we'd just go on a night out, or we'd go for food, and then we'd come home, watch a bit telly, and that's the night. Whereas before, there would always be some sort of drama or argument, and it's like I'd almost got used to that, and I thought that was a way of them showing me that they cared, that they would shout, or like, and then I just realised, no, that it was just so wrong, and I wasn't really in nice relationships with people that were nice people. I did get used a lot, and like the fact that some of my exes, you know, went on Take Me Out straight after, or applied for Love Island, shows the sort of reasons why they wanted to be with me, really. But Scott isn't like that. I can't imagine him applying for Take Me Out.
You're very, I would use the word emotionally literate, you sound. Have you had therapy at all?
So I have, but only for a short time. When I first came out of the jungle, and I found literally the jungle, I found everything very overwhelming. And I don't think I realised the massive difference of being able to walk down the street and then all of a sudden not being able to walk down the street without people knowing who you are, or, you know, personal details of yourself being in the press. I didn't realise how much that affected me, up until the point where I had a panic attack, and I didn't actually know it was a panic attack. I thought I was having a heart attack, which sounds really dramatic now, but I just remember walking to the front door and literally not being able to turn the handle, like really having to coax myself into stepping outside. And that was becoming a daily occurrence, where I was having to ring my mum and being like, I can't do it. And she would have to really sort of just get me out the house, like try and persuade me that everything was going to be okay. And I realised then that I needed to speak to someone. And I'm so pleased that I did, because it did massively help. And it made me realise that I wasn't alone, and that I wasn't sort of having out-of-body experiences because I was crazy. It's just because that was how my mind was dealing with things that were going on. It's always good to talk. And when I felt sad in the past, I've always rang the Samaritans. They're like a lifeline for me, where I always feel better if I'm feeling overwhelmed, and I feel like I don't want to be sort of a burden on my family, even though I know they would never see it as that. I always ring the Samaritans just to offload a little bit.
Well, so I've rung the Samaritans when I went through a tough time. And you know what? I suspect more people than you probably realise have contacted the Samaritans. Yeah. And I'm a big believer in people opening up about that, because I think it can be the difference between, well, being here one day and not here the next. You know, I'm not suggesting that was how you felt, but I mean, I just mean it can stop you descending into a darker place, was how my personal experience of it. It was an objective voice saying, I'm listening. And
yeah, because I think that's the thing. I always thought, right, well, a way to cope is to be on my own. Mm. But then I realised actually that's what's making me worse, is that I'm not answering my phone, that I'm not going out, that I am just sitting in bed for days on end. It does make you feel worse. So now whenever I do start to feel a little bit like that, I always just take things in little steps. So I'll go, right, go and brush your teeth. That's the first thing. And then once you brush your teeth, you find that you can go and brush your hair. Then you can find you can put clothes on. And then all of a sudden, it doesn't feel like this big, massive thing going to the shops. It's just you're taking it in little steps.
Then you pat yourself on the back. You say, oh, I've got my dressing gown on. Yeah. That's good. I'm not sitting there.
Yeah.
Tell me about your podcast with Scott.
Oh, I mean, I've always wanted to do something to do with conspiracy theories because... I mean, I'm named after an alien hunter, Sigourney. My fondest memories with my dad are us making notes on crop circles, and I once fell on a plug and he convinced me that I'd been probed by an alien because it was in a perfect symmetrical triangle. But even though I was the one that fell on the plug, I still believe my dad. So I just wanted to, especially during lockdown, I think people were just running out of things to talk about, things to watch. So I wanted to get a conversation started of different things that maybe people didn't realise were a theory or that they could Google. So, yeah, we went from, like, the Illuminati to royal conspiracies to moon landings, and doing it with Scott was really fun. I mean, it was never the plan, actually, but obviously lockdown happened. and I'm so pleased we did because he is the complete opposite of me. And he is very, like, methodical, factual. He sees things in a different way to me. So it was good. It was a good contrast because I'm constantly trying to persuade him to believe in at least one conspiracy. I haven't managed it yet, but maybe next series I will.
Tell me about Celebrity Karaoke Club, because you know what? This is a series that's happening soon, isn't it? And I've always thought you look like you've got a bit of a voice on you.
Oh, thanks. Well, my mum always says I would make it to judges' houses on X Factor, but I wouldn't get any further.
I mean, your mum. I need your mum in my life. Whenever I have a man and I want her honest opinion and I want her to say... What would she say? No.
Betty would be like, straight away she'd go, no, I've got a bad feeling. But you literally just met him for a cup of tea. Nah, get shot of him.
Did she like Scott? Way? What was her view of Scott though?
She loves Scott. So actually our first date was an absolute disaster. Like everything that could have went wrong.
And all I was good. Like, let me just curl up by the fireside with a cup of tea. My favourite story.
So like the place that we were gonna eat wasn't open. Then he made a joke about taking me to McDonald's, which I didn't know was a joke. I thought he was being serious. Which actually would have been a decent date, but I didn't really fancy sitting in a car park eating chicken selects on our first date. He told me I reminded him of Albert Einstein. So I was like, nah, I think we're just best as friends. And it was my mum that went, no, I've got a really good feeling. I think you should give him another chance. So I'm pleased that she did because I listened for once.
You see, your mum is good at these things. So tell me about Celebrity Karaoke Club. So the singing thing.
Oh, honestly, in my head, I am Liza. Liza Minnelli. Liza with a Z. That's who I am in my head. Like, I'm full on. I just go into a different character. But I did love it. Like, it was just so fun. And, like, everyone was proper up for a laugh. And I'm a huge Drag Race fan. And Courtney acted on it.
Oh, yes.
And I got to duet with her, and she's like drag royalty, so I had a little bit of like a wee come out when I got to duet with her.
Oh, that's
even so Jason Donovan popped up at one point.
I want you just to tell me, what is it about having Bonnie? Because I wanted to ask, what happened to Scott? Does Scott still have his dog then, or is it just Bonnie that you've got?
So we just have Bonnie because Toby lives with Scott's mum and dad. But we go and visit him all the time.
And what kind of dog is Toby?
He's a Jack Russell, so he's crazy. He just runs around in circles, Literally, just runs in circles.
You're going to have to apologise to Scott because I made the very lazy assumption that he'd obviously have a German Shepherd because he's a policeman. Isn't that terrible?
He has actually had a German Shepherd. As a kid, that's so funny. He has actually had a German Shepherd.
Tell me why Chihuahuas and why Bonnie and what does Bonnie mean to you, I guess?
I mean, I am a dog mom. Like, I've even, that is on my bio on Instagram. Like, to me, Bonnie is my child and I do put a lot of, like, time and effort into her and she just makes me forget about bad stuff. Like, that's the beauty of having a pet, is that they love you no matter what. When you have morning breath, when your hair's all over, if you're hungover, like, they just love you no matter what, as long as they're getting love back. And, I mean, I even have a voice for Bonnie in my head. Like, obviously she doesn't talk back, but in my head she does. And I just never feel alone. Like, that's the thing, you never feel lonely when you've got a pet around. Like, I can be in the house on my own all day because Scott's at work, and not hear from another soul on my phone. But I've got Bonnie, so I'm fine. You're just never on your own.
What's your dog voice? I'm going to do mine, Scarlett, because I feel in a safe space with you because you're a dog mum and you understand.
Yeah.
So when I'm calling Raymond, mm-hmm. I say, I don't talk ever like this in the rest of my life. Mm-hmm. I say, good boy, Ray Ray. You good boy? You good boy, Ray Ray. Yes, Ray Ray. Okay, over to you, Scarlett Moffat, with your Bonnie voice.
Your Bonnie. Where's your Bonnie? Yeah, you realise actually when you talk to other humans about it, how I do that. I go, your Bonnie. Where's your Bonnie? Oh, no wonder she looks at me like, why are you talking like that? She must like it though, tail wags when I do that voice.
She's just trying to keep you happy, Scarlett.
Yeah, she is, isn't she?
Secretly, she's going, oh, this woman and that stupid voice.
She doesn't do that voice when she's talking to other people. Why is she talking to me like that?
I really hope you enjoyed listening to that. And do remember to rate, review and subscribe on iTunes.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.